Hello and welcome back to the Rods Break podcast. Today I'm joined by the Stone Man, Martin Jansis. Martin's thing is historical stone lifting. Now, for a lot of you, you may have no idea what that means. And for a lot of you, if you do know what that means, it's probably just because you've seen me on Facebook or Instagram going around lifting some stones for no apparent reason. Well, hopefully by the end of this podcast, you're going to understand exactly why I go around lifting these stones. And maybe even by the end of this podcast, you also will want to go around and find and lift some special stones. But yeah, I reached out to Martin. He's someone that I admire in this field. Historical stone lifting is something that over the last year or so I've become quite passionate about. So I reached out to Martin and asked if he wouldn't mind sitting down and chatting with me. Very kindly, he agreed not only to do the podcast but also to take me out and lift one of the most famous stones that was near us at the time. And then we recorded this podcast. This one's really for me. I just wanted to sit and I wanted to chat to Martin about something that I'm really interested in. But I hope this is something interesting for you guys as well. I really had a blast chatting to him and I hope you guys enjoy it. Check it out. So first off, Martin, thank you very much for joining me. How do I say your surname?
Jansis.
Jansis.
It's pronounced, it's spelled J-A-N-C-S-I-C-S.
Yeah. Yes.
But C's are silent.
Okay.
So it's just pronounced J-A-N-S-I-S.
Okay. Jansis.
Jansis.
Jansis. Yeah. Martin Jansis, a.k.a. The Stone Man. Do you prefer to go just by The Stone Man?
I'm getting used to that now, yes. I'm getting used to it.
I'm really, really looking forward to this. I'm super appreciative of you replying to me and agreeing to do this podcast. And we just came back from lifting the Bravenstone.
Bravenstone.
Yep. And that was really an incredible experience. And I really appreciate you taking the time out to do this. So thank you very much.
My pleasure. It's a pleasure to be here and it's an honor to be asked to come on the show.
Yeah.
I've been looking at your previous videos and it's all the videos I've seen so far have been really good and you're doing a good job.
I appreciate that.
So it's quite an honor to be amongst everyone.
Yeah, well, likewise to sit down and chat with you. We'll get straight into it. I want to know how, because this podcast is for me. A lot of the people listening to this are going to be people coming from a jiu-jitsu background and they're unlikely to know who you are, or some of them will be unlikely to know who you are. I don't care about them. I personally wanted to sit down and chat to you because I'm passionate about stone lifting and you, like I say, usually it's a metaphorical thing, wrote the book on stone lifting, but you literally yeah. wrote the book on stone lifting, which is an awesome book as well.
Yeah, it was myself and Dr. Bill Crawford, who was a good friend of mine in America, who's a man who I think of like a brother. Yeah. He's taught me a lot over the years as well, and especially when we made the Stolen in 2016.
Yeah,
we were sharing the room together, so we had a lot of conversations. I knew him before that, just through speaking through emails.
Yeah,
but it was the first time we met face to face. Oh no, in fact, we met the year previous when I went to lift a stone. He was lifting a stone with Peter Martin, but then, so I was good friends with Peter. He asked me if I wanted to come along, so I met him then, and then a year later we did Stoneland, and we spoke so much about it, and I actually learned quite a lot from him as well.
So let's quickly, because you mentioned it, talk about Stoneland. Now, for those who haven't seen, I knew about the stone lifting beforehand, and when Rogue created Stoneland, it was I immediately started watching it, and I watched it about five times since then. For those who want to,
you're the one that's watching it,
but lots of people have. It's a really beautifully made documentary about the Stoneland. Is that there's three of the series?
Yes,
the Leventadores, I think it is.
Yeah,
the Basque stone lifters,
Spain, yes.
The Fullstirker, which is the Icelandic,
yes,
and then the Stoneland, which is the Scottish.
Well, you had the Spanish one, the Basque stone lifting, then you had Stoneland,
yes,
then Icelandic one. And I know they've got more planned, but I'm not sure what they are yet.
So you know, just talking, firstly, if anyone is interested before, after, or during listening to this podcast about stone lifting, go and watch Stoneland, all three of them. They're amazing documentaries and really well made. How did that come about?
Well, what it was, Stoneland was made in August 2016. But a few year previous to that, Terry Todd and John Todd, They were over in Scotland and with Bill Crawford and David Webster. And then they met Peter Martin, who was the historian of the stone lifting.
Yeah.
Who taught me a lot about the stone lifting sites and the history about them. And of course, Sally's no longer with us, but I try and carry all this on in his memory. But they met him and they were so intrigued with the stories that he was telling them. John and Terry and Bill went back to America and spoke to Bill, who is the owner of Rogue Fitness.
Yes.
And then they agreed to make a documentary about the stones.
Yeah.
And then the original name for the Stoneland was Wind Beneath the Stones.
Uh-huh.
But then before it got finished and finalised, in production, it was changed to Stoneland, which is shorter and, I suppose, more to the point.
Catchier,
really.
Yeah.
I think it was a good choice, actually, because it's more to the point and it's what it is, the land of stones. You know?
Absolutely.
But yeah, so they got in touch. They were in touch with Peter Martin, and then they spoke to Rogue Fitness, and then Bill Crawford emailed me and asked if I wanted to be a part of it, because I had the Facebook page going at the time for the stone lifting, historic stone lifting. And then we just took it from there. I spoke to Terry and John on the phone a few times over in Texas. And then I think it was maybe 3 months after Bill originally got in touch with me, 3.5 months maybe, well, they came over here and we started filming.
Yeah.
We spent 6 days filming it. And I went, they were like the money behind it.
Yeah.
And then I was kind of went around Scotland and got all the permission to lift in people's lands and things like that, and then I helped come up with the plan, what we've got to do, because I know like, the best places to go and stuff, especially in a short amount of time or one stone after the other, what's close and what's far away from each other. So it all came together pretty well.
Oh, it's fantastic. I really do advise people to whether you're interested in stone lifting or not, I think once you watch that, suddenly you're going to be interested in stone lifting.
Well, it's all about the Scottish culture as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got the Highland Games are there as well, the stone lifting. It's kind of trying to bring everything together.
Yeah.
You've got the pipe bands playing throughout and stuff.
Yeah.
And you've got the amazing scenery in Scotland that you see all through the documentary.
Absolutely.
45-minute long. It's it turned out really well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was down to the film crew as well. Because, I mean, the best documentary could be maybe the best people in the world at their sport or whatever, but if the film crew are making it aren't up to scratch, then it might not turn out very well.
Absolutely.
So my hearts go off to the film crew who actually filmed the whole thing and put the whole thing together, because they did a really fantastic job. Came out really well.
Yeah, they did. But I'm interested for now, so let's start off with how you got into strength sports to begin with. Or I don't know, do you have a background in powerlifting or any other strength sports apart from stone lifting?
Well, in 2011, I think, well, I've always been interested in strength. I've always been naturally strong. I was a baby, I was a young kid, and I was always lifting the heavy bag of shot when I was a little kid, and and then moving things about in the garden and stuff all the time. And then I got my first weight set when I was maybe like 10-year-old or something. I got it was a set of dumbbells and a barbell. The barbell was only like 4 foot long. It was just a kid's thing. It was light blue plastic full of water. And then the Christmas after that, I got like a York bench and a set of York plastic sand-filled grey weights.
Yeah.
To go with that. So
everyone knows those. Everyone had them when they were a kid, right?
Yeah, I had them for one Christmas. And then it's kind of... And then, of course, I started buying the magazine with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Lou Ferrigno and such. It was called Iron Man, but it's no longer published now. But that was, I started getting them, putting the posters up on the wall and stuff.
Yeah.
And then trying to idolise these guys. But then I've kind of trained with weights on and off over the years, because it was always the biggest thing was always learning to do it properly. And where I lived in a small town called Dufftown, there was nobody else kind of really into this. Folk were lifting weights and stuff, but they just did it as a pastime. Didn't really want to take it serious. And then there was nowhere I could really go to learn or learn from anyone. So I kind of struggled quite a lot as a kid trying to learn all this stuff.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until later on when I grew up and then I left school when I started taking things more serious. And then, because I started working construction when I left school, I started working for a roofing company, slating and tiling. And then worked with them for 2 years as a labourer, or a year and a half as a labourer. And then I got an apprenticeship. And then there was only four of us working in the company at the time. One guy going through his apprenticeship, and the boss and the boss's son, who was already qualified. So before I could get a chance to learn a trade and actually slate the roofs and learn how to do it properly, I had to make sure that there was enough slates and tiles up on the roof for these guys in the scaffolding.
Sure.
So I had to just take as many slates as I could up in like 20 minutes, 30 minutes. Again. And so I used to just pile them up as far as I could, put a slate on the ground up to my arm, up to my shoulder here. My fingertips would be under the bottom slate, and I was right up on my shoulder, and then up the scaffolding. I'd do that 4 or 5 times, and I maybe had 300 or 400 slates up in the scaffolding, and then I would maybe spend half an hour, 40 minutes, learn the slate, then I have to go back down again, getting out like 400 slates back up again, and then keep going.
That must make you incredibly strong.
Well, it transferred over to stone lifting quite well.
Yeah, we were talking about earlier.
Because I did the same. Before I managed to finish that apprenticeship, my boss retired. So I ended up going to college and doing something completely different, electronics. Got my HNC in electronics. But that was in 2001. I finished that. And there was no kind of electronics work going in this area at that time. So I ended up becoming a builder. I got an apprenticeship as a builder. So I finished my apprenticeship with that and then worked as a builder for several years before I went back to college to become a draftsman. And now I'm a draftsman and an electronic technician at the same time just now. But I did the same thing on the building sites. When lorries came, they couldn't always park next to the building site itself who was going to build. So I had to came due to the ground. So I had to actually carry the blocks from one place to another.
Yeah.
Maybe one person might have a wheelbarrow, another the rest of us had to just pick them up and carry them.
Yeah.
So I started off just like I'll be all steady, just lifting one block, and I thought, this is going to take a day, but this block isn't the way, nothing. So then I started lifting two blocks and thought, oh, I'll just put on my shoulder, and then I end up with three and then four blocks. And then I'll be all just sticking with one block, back and forth. So I'm just picking four blocks off onto the pallet up on my shoulder.
I hope they're paying you four times as much.
I wish they did. Yeah, but it's the same thing. I put the blocks on the ground and then I stand over them.
Yeah.
It's really just the same stance I take for stone lifting. So I think everything from the construction site translated over to stone lifting.
You didn't realise that you were setting yourself up for a life of stone lifting.
I was actually training then, but like you say, I never realised it. So I'd do the same thing. I'd get my stance, I'd stand over it, put my hand under, I put it on my shoulder down on the top block, and just one motion, right up on my shoulder.
Yeah.
So we'll be walking about here, back and forward, up and down the ladder, whatever.
Yeah.
And then I realised my strength was really going up and up and up. And so I thought, well, in 2011, I started to look up to compete in strongman.
So were you doing any strongman training, or was it literally felt so strong from working on the building site that you thought you could compete with the strongman?
It was just in building sites alone.
That's amazing.
I'd never trained anything else. Just on and off weightlifting as I was growing up.
Yeah.
But nothing like too serious because I just didn't really know how to make a program or train properly and stuff, you know, or how to put things together and train the right order of muscles and things like I do now. I did a little bit of powerlifting as well for maybe a year before, I think it was powerlifting for maybe 4 months. Then I went to the Scottish Championships and got a second place.
In powerlifting?
Yeah. And then I did it for like an hour, 4 or 5 months after that, and then I got my appendix out. And just never went back to it.
Yeah.
I ended up just doing strongman instead, flipping tires and stuff.
So you competed in strongman?
I've completed 3 times strongman.
How did you get on?
The first competition I went down to, it was in London.
Okay.
Yeah, it was because what I did, because I wasn't a powerlifter anymore and I was really into, I started lifting the stones because I went to, because I was researching for competing in strongman, there wasn't even really much on the go for the 105 category at the time.
Yeah.
When I was like 100 kilogram at the time, everything was for the open category. I mean, it was competitions, but they just weren't really widely known.
Yeah.
So I ended up accidentally coming across the Inverstone. I just typed something in. I was there for maybe an hour researching all this strongman stuff.
Yeah.
And then I accidentally came across the Inverstone.
Okay.
And Peter Martin had written a story about it. And I thought, this is quite amazing. So I ended up got in touch with him the next day through email. He got back to me, I think, a couple of days later. And we agreed to meet in about 2 or 3 months' time at the Crathie, where the Inverstone is.
Yeah.
Which you've done a very good job lifting yourself.
Thank you, I appreciate that. I did that yesterday, I think.
Yes, I watched the video. You did a very good job.
Thank you.
Strong lift.
Thank you.
And I was really glad with the way you put it down. It was really nice to see.
Yeah.
So, well done.
I appreciate that. Thank you. It means a lot coming from you.
Well, I think you did a good job.
Thank you.
And I can see you've got, the way you put it down, you've got respect for
the whole culture. You have to.
It was nice to see.
Yeah, no.
So I like you even a lot bit more now than I did. So I met him, about Peter Martin, down at Crathie at the Inverstone about 3 months after. I think to train with it, I got a stone from work. I was picking stones out the ground, so I could see this big one that got dug up from the crane.
Yeah.
So I took it to work with a digger. So I thought, I'm going to take it home. So I put it on the back of the pickup and dumped it home and rolled it around the back garden. And got a metal barrel from work as well. And started loading it onto the barrel.
Mm.
It was only, the stone was at 110 kilo, I think.
Yeah.
And it actually took me maybe about 3 or 4 weeks to actually load it onto the barrel.
Really?
But then I was kind of learning how to lift it and the best technique and stuff.
So you weren't taught technique, you were just having to work it out for yourself.
No, I just kind of worked it out myself. Yeah. It's like the book I've written with Bill. Bill's the same. Everything he's written in the book is he's not read from anywhere else. He's taught himself.
Well, the resources weren't there.
No, and everything I've written is from my own words. Nothing's like copied anywhere else. Everything's just from in here, you know, and the way I feel. It's everything's written in my own words. So that's how I know it can work for people.
Yeah.
That's what I'm happy to pass it on, because it works for me, it can work for them.
Yeah.
But so I lifted, I trained with that stone, 110 kilo for, again, about 3 or 4 weeks. And then I went down to the Inverstone, and all I wanted to do, what was like 8 kilos heavier than Inverstone is, so I wanted to lift, all I wanted to do was lift it on my lap and see if I could maybe stand up,
yeah.
maybe as close to the chest as I could, you know. But as soon as I picked it up, I stood up, it came up here, it was quite high up my chest, and straight away, without thinking, it just rolled up on my shoulder. I didn't aim for it. I just wanted to pick it up and see if I could stand up with it.
This is very disheartening for me. Because I picked up the Inverstone. I've done it, I lifted it 4 times now on 2 separate occasions, and it's very dense, isn't it? It doesn't look that big, but it's very, very dense, and it is very heavy. And you pick it up and you can get it to chest. And when I did it yesterday or the day beforehand, my goal second time around was to try and squat it. And I got it into position. I'm like, I'm not squatting this thing. It's just too big. to imagine someone picking it up for the first time and by accident rolling it all the way up onto their shoulder is very sad to hear from for me.
Well, apologies. it was just a natural reaction because I was so used to doing that in the building
years
sites.
Of lifting it onto your shoulder.
I started working building sites when I left school, and I did it all the way up to when I left, kind of on and off, but mostly on. There was only a few years that I wasn't working in building sites. I was working in factories because building sites were like taking a plummet and there was no work going ahead. Yeah. I was getting paid off and stuff. But most of my life I've been in building sites up until 2013 when I went back to college to learn to be a draftsman.
Yeah.
And then I got a job as a draftsman a few months after that. And then I worked as a draftsman for 2 years, and then with the same company, I'm now doing electronic engineering, electronic technician. So I'm building power supplies and I write documents so people can, like, procedures so they can learn how to build the stuff we build. And then I check over, wiring diagrams and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's a big change from the building sites.
Sure. But the building sites gave you the power to just throw the Inverstone up there.
The building site's not somewhere I want to go back to. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It's a really good job, and we need builders and construction people, or life would be 100% different.
Sure.
So there's no way, I wouldn't put it down in any way, but it's just not something I want to go back to.
Sure.
Because when I was at school, when I was born, I was, had a meningitis when I was like 6 weeks old, and I almost died from that.
Wow.
Because my mum and dad were coming in for Aberdeen to see me.
Yeah.
And then one day they got a phone call from the hospital saying I was going to die. So they had to come down and see me while they still could.
Mm.
And they called in a priest to give me my last rites and stuff.
Wow.
But then, I pulled through and sitting here with you now. But for years, that gave me a lot of complications.
Yeah.
And I was born with one kidney as well. So that kind of gave me complications as well. So I was on like a lot of medication when I was younger, until I was maybe 7 years old. And that kind of made me very drowsy and stuff, especially at school.
Mm.
So my school life and work didn't go as well as what it could have, because I was started off on these tablets and stuff. And back when I was a kid, the education, it's not like it is now. The teachers give you time.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid, if you weren't top of the class or the top five, then you're just thrown in the corner.
Yeah.
Totally got on with it. Same with high school as well. So it wasn't until I left school that I actually went to college for the electronics. I gave myself an education. Because even when I finished college, the last 3 months of my college course, the lecturers went on strike for more money. So I ended up finishing the course myself.
Really?
I passed it, but it was a lot of work because they all went on strike. There was one lecturer to go around to everyone, and there was no time to go and see him because he was seeing somebody else all the time.
Yeah.
So I ended up giving myself really an education. And then I went to Button Foot College a few times just to, because I enjoyed learning. And I knew that I could take things in and learn more and more. So engineering now is as close as a passion as the stone lifting is now.
Sure.
So now I just want to keep learning more engineering things, electronics and robotics and stuff.
Yeah.
And eventually I'm going to write a book in it.
Wow.
But that's why I don't want to go back to building sites.
Yeah.
Because engineering and electronics is my life.
Yeah.
And again, without it, I wouldn't be the same.
Yeah.
But if it wasn't for that, I would still probably be in the building sites, maybe working for myself.
Yeah, throwing things onto your shoulder.
Yeah. But without the building site for them years, I've got to be thankful for it. Because it
for
gave,
the strength.
Yes, because it gave me the strength to be who I am now. And because I've been able to achieve what I can achieve, I've managed to break all that down and teach it to other people. I go to America. I've been to America three times to teach it over there now. I'm back again this September, maybe in October as well, I'm not sure. And I've been invited to go back every September until I've had enough, I suppose, just to teach stone lifting for 3 days.
A lot more people are doing stone lifting in America these days.
Yes, it's very big in America.
Yeah.
That is now why I'm planning starting an online coaching business.
Wow.
So I can coach people from here but over there. So I can do it online. I'm hoping to get that going in the summer. I'm just going to call it, because I'm known as a stone man, I'm just going to call it Stone Man Fitness.
Yep, that works. So
it's me.
Yeah.
I'm just going to break everything down and teach them. Then I'm going to start an online course, fitness course for a personal training quite shortly. So once I've done that, I'll start teaching more strawman and like bodybuilding and stuff as well, nutrition. But I'm going to start with stone lifting,
of course,
just now. But to get back to that question about strawman competitions,
well, we went back to the, let's go back to the Inverstone, shall we?
Yeah.
So you pick up the Inverstone, you throw it on your shoulder. Who went with Peter or?
Yeah, well, I met Peter Martin down there.
So what did he think of you when you picked up the stone for the first time and put it on your shoulder?
He was loving it, yeah. Because then he asked me to do it again. He says, I'll get my camera, I'll get my phone out. So he recorded it on his phone or his camera, I can't remember. Yeah. He said, can you do that again? So I did it a second time. He said, right, just do what you did a minute ago. So up again, on the lap and up here and strap on the shoulder.
Yeah.
But I was just surprised how it felt going from here to here.
Very natural.
I didn't think about it even the second time. I didn't think about what it was like to do that. I just did it. But especially the first time I left it out when I was up here, I didn't even try and do it. I just kind of went.
Yeah,
you know, it's just because all the years lifting blocks and stuff in the building sites.
Yeah, I need to be practicing more. I need to do a lot more shouldering if I want to be getting that up there.
There's a lot can be said for physical labor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think even even in jiu-jitsu, there are some people who are just beasts on the mat. Don't go to the gym, don't work out, but they have a manual laboring job. The grip strength is immense. The arm strength is immense. Their core strength is incredible.
So I'm wondering if, like, because I mean, I've said for a long time that I think a good stone lifting routine, it's worked into, or stone lifting is worked into an already physical routine for any kind of almost any sport. Wall, con and hunch, that's you and that sport.
Yeah.
Like, wrestling, even,
yeah,
you know, you can just picking up stones and pick up a guy, you know,
absolutely. I feel jiu-jitsu,
you know, yeah. You're getting your strength and your grip and you're tightening your body in a different way. So, you could, when you're on the mat with somebody, you could hold them stronger, you know.
Yeah, I do feel the crossover with that. I do a lot of I don't have any stones at home, but I use sandbags to kind of replicate that sort of awkwardness. I started doing a lot of sandbag squats and shouldering, and my strength on the mat I felt increased significantly. So I definitely think there's a huge crossover there.
Yeah, I think putting stone lifting into an already existing routine for almost any physical demanding sport will give good benefits. Like, and I would like to kind of teach that through my personal training. I'm going to start.
So I'm going to, just before we carry on talking about the stones, I'm going to come in with a comment that a lot of people have and that I have to answer a lot, but I want it to come from the stone man himself. A lot of people see stone lifting. I posted a video yesterday about it, doing the Inverstone, and everyone sees it. And because the movement goes against the standard conventional idea of how you're meant to lift things off the ground, you know, people do a deadlift, they forget that they're doing a bar that is designed to be lifted in the safest way possible. And then they see you with a rounded back lifting a stone and they go, oh my God, you're going to put your back out on all of this stuff. So can you explain the reality of that situation?
Well, lifting a stone and lifting a barbell is two different things.
Yeah.
You know, they're lifting like 300 kilograms off the floor, for example. And you're going to lift like a stone at 120. There's not saying you're going to lift it.
Yeah.
So I've had guys who can lift immense weight in a gym and a deadlift bar, but I've had to show technique. They think, oh, I'm going to, this will be easy. They go and lift the stone, but they can get it off the ground, but that's all they can do with it because there's no technique there. You show them the technique and they can get it quite high. But I mean, the barbell is like 6 foot long.
Yeah.
So the weight is out within your body, can quite far from your body, in that respect from the stone. The stone is quite small, and it's, so you're using to lift the stone and grab it to start with. You're lifting your muscles are working in a different way.
Yeah.
You're using muscles that you wouldn't usually necessarily use in a deadlift. And at the same time, I think that the farther away the bar is, the weight is from you, like, so on a bar, I'm not going to say it's easy to lift, but it becomes a little bit easier because all the weight is condensed in a small object and it's so close to all the weight is in your center of gravity, so straight away you're fighting gravity even more because it's all there. And like you say, the biggest thing is you're using different muscles and you're using your body in a totally different way. And on a barbell, the weight is even. I mean, to really think about lifting a stone, you'd have to put, say, like 100 kilograms on this side and 90 or 80 on this side. And that's how different it can be.
Yeah.
Because a lot of stones are uneven, so they're off balance, which is another thing I've got in a book here. It's called the basic 10 of 5 and 5. So you break down two sets of 5, the basic 10. The 5 characteristics of a stone, which you've got your size of the stone, you've got the shape of it, because it could be wider here, narrow here, and then you've got the texture. If it's a smooth stone, it could be 100 kilograms, but it might be harder to lift than a stone at 120 kilograms, because the 120 kilogram stone has got rougher texture, so you can grab it. If the other stone at 100 kilograms is smooth, your hands are wanting to come away from it, so it makes it a harder challenge. And then you've got the weight of the stone, and then you've got the balance. So the stone is off balance. So sometimes some stones are off balance. But it could be quite a similar amount of kilos from one side to the other. So you're putting more pressure on one side of your body than the other side, which you'll never do that in a gym and a barbell.
Yeah.
So your muscles, your body's working in a total different way. I think the ultimate test of strength is lifting a stone. And we all do it. But for me, lifting a stone at 1.5 times your body weight, for me, is my ultimate test.
So have you done that? I assume that you have done that. Yeah. Your body weight is what, 105?
104 just now.
104, yeah. So 100... 50, 60 kilos.
Yeah, well, I'm lifting a stone just now in the garden of a concrete block. It's 174.
Yeah.
I've not took it off the ground.
Yeah.
I've got another block. It's 155. I take it off the ground and do a few reps with front squats. But the other one I've got set in a wooden pedestal that I made. And then I squat down and put it on my lap and I stand up with it that way. Because it's quite a, the block is quite high. So you've got to have a kind of wide stance, and the technique is slightly different to lift it, because when you lift it up, kind of like start with the stone lift, there's always a bit of a row, and if with it being so high, the concrete block, it hits off the side of your legs, so it's hard to, actually quite hard to get it over the knees.
Sure, yeah.
So just now I've got it on just in a plinth there, and I just put it on, squat down on my knees, and I just squat up and do it.
Yeah,
it's 174.
Wow. And what about people saying that you're going to hurt your back because you're lifting with a slightly rounded back?
If you don't, your back is just as straight as it can be.
Exactly. Well, this is why I say you cannot lift a stone with a straight back.
No.
Because you've got to come out over the top of it.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
A barbell, a deadlift, yes, because you're squatting. Your backside is quite down low to the floor.
Yeah.
You know? So with a deadlift is different. You straighten your back before you lift. You know, you straighten your arm. Make sure your arms are straight.
Yeah.
Straighten your back, head up. Up you go. You can't do that stone. A stone, when you lift a stone, you've got your four things you think about. You've got your feet, your hands, your legs, and then your lift. So you get your feet in position. You get your hands in the right placement, so you can lift the stone if it's off balance or whatever. Yeah. And then you've got your legs. Your leg, when you lift a stone, your legs, no matter if you are, whatever height you are, my height, 5'9", or somebody at 6'10".
Yeah.
Your legs are always going to be in an angle. I think it's called the obtuse angle.
Uh-huh.
So greater than 90, but less than 180 degrees. Uh-huh. You're always going to be in that range. And you're not going to be like that in a deadlift. So your back is straight. So, I mean, the lower you can put your arse to the floor, your back will be straighter. But there's no physical way you can do that lifting a stone.
Yeah.
But your back will be as straight as it can be.
Yeah.
But you build your back. But that's why you start with a smaller stone. You build yourself up. You need to build the small muscles in your back up.
If your back is strong enough, it can do those sort of movements. Yeah.
It's like if you, in a business, if someone comes into a business and they teach you how to lift properly.
Yeah.
I mean, now you're only allowed to lift like 10 or 12 kilos off the floor.
Sure.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, when I started labouring in building sites, cement bags were 50 kilograms.
Yeah.
And then it went down to 25.
Yeah.
But for the first year, I was picking up 50 kilogram bags.
That'll make you strong.
Yeah. And I was lifting two of them at one time on my shoulder.
You're so strong.
I was only about 17 at
no
a time.
No way.
But now you're only allowed to lift legally like maybe 12 kilograms or 15 kilograms off the floor.
Really?
And you can actually refuse to do that any more than that.
Really?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Everyone's getting weaker.
Yeah. So when somebody comes in to teach you, like in a company, to teach you the proper way to lift, can you lift totally different? You put your hands there, feet next to it, slightly out, and then you squat down, straighten your back, you look up, and then you lift. You can't do that with heavy stone. You've got to do it properly. You've got to have your legs in that like obtuse angle. So it's greater than 90 degrees, but less than 180. It's always going to be in that range. And because of that, you can't have a straight back because you're bending down. But all you do is you get your feet in place, you get your arms in place, and get your legs ready in that angle. You take your breath, you lift, but you always have your arms straight. if you never lift with like bent arms either, because as soon as you lift with a bent arm, that weight is, as soon as it comes off the ground, your arms straighten,
sure,
and you could hurt your bicep,
yeah,
or you could hurt your back. So it's completely two different things, lifting a barbell to lifting a stone. It's just all about the way your muscles are working.
Sure.
And then the condensity of the weight itself. It's more against gravity in a way.
Mm.
But so all that weight is against your center of gravity, personally. So it's a lot harder. It's just harder to lift.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about that.
You know?
No doubt about that.
That's why I think, put into a stone lifting routine into an already physically demanding routine for a sport will give a lot of good benefits, make you stronger all around.
Yeah, I agree with that. Let's go back to the Inversone. So before we talk about the Inversone specifically, you lift this stone, you make two incredible lifts to shoulder, which very, very few people are able to do. You'd never lifted a stone before, or a historic stone before at the very least. How did that feel? And it must have given you a huge urge to continue to do this and find other stones, because obviously now you are the stone man. So that was the beginning point, right?
Yeah, 2011, I'm sure it was November. But since then I was hooked.
Really?
Ever since that day, yeah.
What was it about that moment? And obviously I've done it, I know. But I want you to describe, what was it about lifting that stone that made you fall in love with the sport?
It was just being a part of something great.
Yeah.
It's a whole culture that goes with it. I was thinking about what I read online as I was driving down to the stone. We met Peter Martin. We actually went into the pub across the road at the time, just for a Coke, because I was driving. We went across the road, and it was actually going across the road and up to the gate and actually seeing the stone. It was an unreal feeling.
Yeah.
Just seeing like a piece of history. It's like going to a museum and seeing something from the World War or from back to the Roman area or something like that, you know.
But then you get to be part of that history.
Yes. So as soon as you put your hands on that stone, actually part of that history forever.
Yeah.
But actually seeing the stone and walking over to it and standing over it means just as much to me as actually lifting the stone itself. It's just an immense feeling you get. Just being a part of something, it's so special. Because the stone has got so much history behind it, and so many hundreds of people have lifted it before you and will lift it. So you're a part of all that.
Mm. And you talk about the history of the stone. So let's talk about the history of that stone and some other stones. So the Inverstone, what is the background of the Inverstone?
It's got quite a few good stories.
I'm sure.
It was
this is what I love. I love the legend, the myths, the stories behind.
I mean, that's what makes them what they are. It's makes them so special. Like, give you... That's why when you walk over to the stone and see it, it gives you a warm feeling, because it's just, you know, it's history.
You've heard about it and now you're seeing it and touching it and lifting it.
I'm actually there.
Yeah. So yeah, tell me about the Inverstone.
if you got Donald Dinney for the Dinney Stones, he got his name off the Inverstone.
Yeah.
Which is a story I quite tell often, I quite like to tell. Because Donald Dinney's father was a stonemason.
Yeah.
And he was quite a good stonemason. He actually had two labourers, because one labourer couldn't keep up with him. He was just going to, and then of course Donald worked with him before he went to Hell and Games and stuff as well, as a profession. But there was a guy, Donald Dinney, Robert Dinney, Donald's father. He was working in Crathie one time, building a wall or something. I think it was a stone wall he was building.
Uh-huh.
And a guy came down from, it was Skye. He was working in Manchester or something, but he was wanting to go home for the recession at the time or something like that. And he came across Robert Dinney, and he says, I'm looking for a job to get some money to travel back home and take home to my family. He says, well, you look like a big lad, so I'll tell you what, that stone there, which was the Inverstone, he says, if you can lift that stone onto that wall, I'll give you a job. Because in this county, I'm the only person that'll ever lift that stone yet.
Yeah.
So the guy bent down, picked it up, and up to the lap, onto the chest, onto the wall. And then he took it down, did it again. And Robertson, he says, right, I'll give you a job. what's your name? And he said, Donald. I can't remember his surname, but it was Donald. And he says, right, I was so impressed with what you did there. I'm going to call my first son after you. And that was Donald, didn't he?
Yeah.
So after that, I went away. He says, right, we're going to the pub and have a pint and speak about your, your wages. Like. And then there's another story. There was this like DIY kind of expert who would go around businesses and farms and stuff with his horse and cart and do labouring or jobs for people just to get some cash. And then there was these guys in different counties. And one day there was this guy from another county area came over here to like Crathay way and tried to steal his business. The first guy was quite a big guy. He was quite strong. Another guy was just a little kind of guy. He said, you can't be here because this is where I work. And he says, well, what you got to do? So when the little guy from the other place went into his business establishment and asked if he had any work, the guy picked up the Inver Stone and put it into the back of his horse and cart. And the guy was too weak to lift it out. So he says, well, I can't lift this thing out. So he was trying for ages and he just couldn't lift it out. He says, I'll tell you what, if you lift it out, then when I come back.
Yeah.
So he lifted it out and the guy went away and never came back again. So it's quite good.
So the Inver Stone is quite unique in that it has the 265, the weight of the stone in pounds, inscribed onto it. Who did that, or what point did that happen?
It was used at one point as well for travellers to like tie horses down.
Because there's a small hole in it. Mm-hmm. It looked like there was a bolt in there.
Yeah. I think it used to either sit on top of a steel bar, or it used to sit on the ground. The steel bar was placed in it, and then which is probably more likely. And then people would put the horses onto that steel bar, and because the stone was so heavy, the horses wouldn't move it. But the most, to me, I think the most unique story with the Inver Stone that makes it like the most significant historic stone in Scotland, and then you've got the Denny stones straight after that, which is their more widely known.
Yes.
But for significant purposes, especially for modern time, the Inver Stone has the most history to it and the most meaning in history to us. Because of that, it's why we've got Atlas Stones in the world's strongest man today. Because David Webster took the Inver Stone one time to some music hall in Glasgow for an exhibition he was putting on, like an indoor Highland Games sort of thing. And he makeshifted like a wooden stone wall, but painted it so it looked like stone. And he challenged the crowd to come out and lift it onto the stone wall. It was only a handful of people came out and could even budge it. Mm. One guy, I can't remember his name, but he lifted it a couple of times onto the wall. It was only about 2.5-3 feet high, maybe. But then after that, in the crowd was Peter Martin and his father. And then his father, after seeing this, took a big interest in historic stones, and he started doing the research, which then passed on to Peter himself.
Yeah. Which you're continuing on.
Yep. I'm trying to do what I can.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then at the same time, the crowd loved the thing with the Inver Stone, so they took it to an outdoor Highland Games as well that they had, and then people want to see more stones than just the one stone.
Mm.
So off the back of the Inver Stone and the crowd wanting to see more, and the competitors, I think, wanting to do more, they made the McGlashan stones. And then Inver Stone went back to Crathay. So they had the McGlashan stones made off the back of the Inver Stone. And then the Inver Stone, the McGlashan stones were used in quite a lot of Highland Games at the time. And then in 86, they were taken to France, they were used in the World's Strongest Man, and then used that one to maybe 93, I think, in the World's Strongest Man. McGlashan stones, yes. Because John Paul Sigmundson was the first guy to load all four stones, and then he got a fifth one. I think he loaded that one. He was the first one to load that one as well. And then 1 year they never had the Atlas stones in the event, and then the McGlashan stones. And then the year after, I think it was maybe 95, 96, they had introduced Atlas stones. And I think they were called Atlas stones off of Atlas himself, god Atlas.
Yeah.
So then off of the back of the McGlashan stones, they made Atlas stones for the World's Strongest Man.
And that's sort of the most symbolic event in all of Strongman.
So it wasn't for the Inver Stone,
Wow.
We won't have any of that.
I did not know that story.
Yes. And then you've got Charlie Bell Oliphant with his Abler stones.
Yeah.
But he got the idea off of that from the Glashing stones.
Yeah.
So even that wouldn't have, Charlie wouldn't have made them if it wasn't for the Inverstone.
So the Inverstone, David Webster taking the Inverstone to this.
To Glasgow, yes, for exhibition.
Kicked off this thing that culminated in the Atlas stones being what they are today.
Yeah, well, I go out and visit David in Glasgow every few months, 2 to 3 months. And one time we're speaking about it and we're talking about the whole story. And I say, so it's just like a chain reaction you kicked off.
Mm.
You know, it's just links to your chain. You did that, and Peter Martin seen it, and his son followed on his work, and then you got the McClashing stones, other stones, Atlas stones.
Wow.
No, it's just him taking, David Webster taking that, the Ember Stone down to Glasgow that day.
Yeah.
For that event, kicked off a massive chain reaction.
Yeah. Amazing.
You know, and then it led up to even to myself going to lift it that day.
Yeah.
And then meeting Peter and then continuing all his work. So maybe if David never took it to Glasgow that day, maybe I wouldn't even be lifting stones now either.
Yeah.
So everything comes from that day.
Wow.
So if someone went back in time,
changed that day,
then none of this might be.
We wouldn't be talking right now.
No, might not have Atlas stones or anything.
Wow.
You know.
So, it's pretty cool.
So forget Back to the Future.
So after you lift the Inver stone, the second stone that you lifted was the stone that we went to lift today.
The Raven stone. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was in, that would have been March 2012, because I remember I got my appendix out in 2012 in February of that year, and it was only a few weeks later I went to lift Emberstone, the Bravenstone,
because
Peter had went to visit it, but then I think he lost his way, and then he
couldn't find it.
Yeah, because he took the wrong direction, which I did to start with as well.
Sure.
But then, like,
you're lucky it's relatively close to where you live. So you
I think after maybe 40 minutes, I found it. I think I went down the wrong road for half an hour, came back, went another road, and then seen a churchyard and thought, that's it. And then the heart started pumping.
Yeah, this site we just visited this morning is really spectacular, irrespective of a stone to lift there. It's it's the ruins of an old church in this big graveyard surrounding it from, what do you say, the 1400s?
Yes, I believe it was like about the 12 to the 1400s it was built, and then last used, and maybe the 1600s, something like that.
Yeah.
And then that's why I suppose they've got the stone grave there.
And then the story of the actual stone is an awesome story. We spoke about it earlier, but if you want to tell it again, what that stone was used for.
Yeah, well, because you've got it was a punishment stone. Really.
And are there any other punishment stones around, or is this
it's the only one I know of?
Yeah, yeah.
But there are other stone graves like but it's the only one, it's got like a Braven stone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because back then, they used to, if you're deemed a criminal, you'd be told to lie down in the stone coffin, but the stone coffin is built off the ground. It's maybe built 6 inches, and it slopes up to about maybe a foot. So you were told to lie down in there, and there's a little place, bit what you've seen, you can fit the head in.
Yeah.
So then,
quite obviously where you put your head, yeah.
When someone was lying down in the stone coffin, they would get a stone slab and put it on the coffin, and only the head would be exposed, lying down the way. And then the Braven stone would be then being put on top of the stone slab for extra security.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, maybe if the stone slab's there, you can maybe inch it away if you can get your hands in place, but not with the Braven stone on top.
Yeah.
So as people would go into the church, they would see them sitting there and think, well, a criminal. So they would spit in them, pee in them, anything, you know.
Now you think about it, the stone we are lifting today was probably cursed by so many criminals thinking, this goddamn stone is lying on top of me. Everyone's shouting at me and throwing mud at me and pissing on me or whatever. And
and
we know what, so that would have been maybe 1400s, 1500s, so that
something like that back then. Yeah,
so a huge amount of history with that stone.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, even back then, they about to have lifted it for a bit, just to see if they could lift it off the ground or something.
Because a lot of the lifting stones around Scotland were part of, belonged to clans, or would be used to show that you were strong enough to maybe join the army or to prove your strength.
Yeah, a lot of them were to sort out like arguments and disputes.
Yeah, I love this. I love this. Yeah.
It's like there's the two stones. There's the one in Wales. There's a wall that separates two farms.
Yeah.
And farms are always
bickering about something.
Yeah, always, because again, they've got their cattle, they've got their cattle. They go to market. What are you doing again?
Yeah.
So there's always an argument there between farms somewhere. But these two farms are only separated with a stone wall. And they had the stone. I think it looked something like the Braven Stone or the Dalwhinnie Stone that you're going to visit later. So what they would do is, if they had an argument, like the people that worked in the farm, the farmhands or whatever, instead of going fisticuff and knocking each other out so they couldn't work the next day, provide for a family, blah, 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 what they would do, they would lift the stone over the wall and put it into the next farm, and then he would have to lift it back, and he would lift it back again, and back and forth, until one of them was no longer capable of lifting a stone up over the wall, and then the other guy, the one that couldn't do it, was the one that lost the argument. And you say, right, you win.
Do you imagine just going down to that village and randomly there's two jacked farmers, there's two guys who are giving each other funny looks, but they're both absolutely massive because they've been spending super stubborn guys just lifting this huge stone back and forth.
And you've got the, it's a really good story, and I mean, we should do it today. It would be good today, no?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Any war
stuff. The next time someone has an argument with me, I'm going, come on, we're going to lift a stone. You're going to go back and forth over the wall.
It was sort it out. Solve some wars that way as well.
Yeah, like, absolutely, absolutely.
But you've got the two stones in Glenroy as well. The Glenroy stones, they were used for the same sort of purpose.
Yeah.
One stone at one the grey stone I've named the Grey Mountain because of the way it's shaped. It's 137. Another stone, it's called Big Red. It's a 133. Two stones completely different from each other. But if, again, back hundreds of years ago, if two guys working there had an argument, because there was different farms there as well, instead of going fist to cuffs to each other, for the same reason again, they couldn't work, couldn't provide, blah, blah, they'll go and lift the stone. And whoever could lift the stone the highest would win the argument.
Yeah.
Or if they could lift one but not the other, they would win. Or if they could both lift the stones, I suppose they would maybe go for repetitions.
Yeah.
Until one of them couldn't do it anymore. And then she's right, you win.
Yeah.
That's the argument. Argument done. Solved.
And it's very likely that this sort of, this way of, you know, sorting out arguments and confrontations.
Yes.
Would have been used all over the world.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've got a lot of stones in Iceland that have got,
oh yeah, I want to talk about Iceland as well, but we'll carry on with the Scottish one. So I'm going to see, hopefully, if I'm hoping to have time, I have a seminar tonight, but we're driving down and I'm hoping to stop at the Newton Moore Stone and the Dalwhinnie Stone. So what's the history of the Dalwhinnie Stone? Because Dalwhinnie, that means manhood stone, right?
No, Dalwhinnie is just the...
Or is it just a name?
It's just the name of the place, really. It's just the name of the town. And you've got the Dalwhinnie Distillery as well.
Okay.
Which is quite a famous distillery. But the Dalwhinnie Stone is, in the history of the stone lifting, it's relatively new. It's been on the go for maybe 50 years, something like that. And it was, but it's been used as a test of strength since day one.
Yeah.
And the Newton Moore Stone is really the same thing. It's actually older, a lot older. But from the history, been used quite for hundreds of years because it's on a, what you call an old coffin road.
Yeah.
It's where, before cars and stuff, if someone died, they would put them in a coffin and they'd have a track they would follow. Then it was called a coffin road. They would take the coffin here and carry it. A group of men would carry it from here down to the church or the gravesite. But along the way, because it was such a distance carrying the coffin, they would actually stop off and have wine and cheese and lift a stone, test the strength of a stone. There was stones situated about the place and they would, along the road, they would stop and actually have, because it's like a wine and cheese thing as well, towards the Coffin Road, but they would have the stone sitting there and test the strength of the stone.
I have to go and grab some wine and cheese on the way to the Newton Moore Stone,
But yeah, so they would test themselves to gave him like a change of pace to break up the day for him, you know.
Yeah.
See who was strong, who wasn't.
And then you wanted to tell the story earlier, and it sounded good. And there's a few stones that we will only be able to make if I have time. And that's the Chieftain Stone.
Yeah, the Fianna Stone. Testing Stone.
No, the Chieftain Stone at the
Castle
Mackenzie.
Yeah, the Mingus.
Yeah.
Castle Mingus.
Yeah.
It's pronounced Mingus. But it's kind of spelt like it's been a long day.
There's the big castle there, and it's a very smooth stone, isn't it?
It's pronounced like pronounced Mingus.
Yeah.
But it's spelled like
Menzies.
Yeah, Castle Menzies.
Okay, yeah.
I always.
So it's not Menzies. It's
Mingus.
Mingus.
Aye. If you say Menzies to the people at work, they kind of take offense to that.
Okay. Don't say that then.
So it's got to be Mingus.
Mingus.
Yeah, because I used to call it Castle Menzies.
Yeah.
Or the Menzies Castle Stone. But it's Mingus.
And what's the history of that stone? Because firstly, that looks like a very difficult stone to lift.
It's the weight of it is 115 kilograms.
Yeah.
So lighter than the Ember Stone.
Yeah.
But to lift it, it's like 150.
Really?
It was so smooth.
Doesn't sound good. might have to drive past that one.
But the castle itself is a really great location.
Yeah.
It's good to go and have a look at even outside the castle, even if you go in or, or not, you know. But the stone itself, it's like lifting a stone at 150 kilograms.
Really?
It's just so smooth. It's like a...
Really?
Yeah, like a table. Yeah. Honestly, it is. You've really, with that one...
You've got to be squeezing in.
Yeah, you've got to use your forearms on your biceps. You know, you're really squeezing. You could... It's like that one is like an Atlas stone.
Yeah.
With the Ember stone, the more
it's like a squashed Atlas stone,
With the Ember stone, the more you put your hand under, the less grip you've got. Because when you put because the stone is shaped like that, getting rounder, the more you put your hands under the Ember stone, the more gap you're creating between your palm and the stone.
Sure.
So you want your palm to be the pressure point of the stone. You just want your fingers to be under the Ember stone.
Yeah.
Because of the shape of it.
Yeah.
So if you put if you put your hands right under, you're creating a big gap between the forearm, the palm, and the fingers, because it's just the shape of it. So then when you go to lift it, there's no pressure point and your hands will come away from it.
Mm.
That's why you lift it with your hands more just under the sides of it.
Yeah.
But like it's an Atlas stone and the Castle Mingus stone.
You've got to get right underneath
it. You've got to, because it's so smooth. If you have your hands at the side of it, and just under the side, hands will come away. There's no grip at all. So you've got to put your hands under as far as possible. If you can touch your fingers together and do it, you've got to put your hands under that stone as far as possible, because it's so smooth. And not only just push in with your palms and your forearms, your knee, put your biceps into it as well. Everything, squeezing your chest, up and up it goes.
Yeah.
Use everything you've got.
Okay.
It's just so smooth.
Yeah.
But which makes stone lifting such a unique thing, natural stone lifting.
They're all different.
Yes, no two stones are the same. They've all got their own challenge.
Yeah.
It's like the two stones in up in Grattan Spey, the Auchinach stones. One is 100 kilograms, and it's kind of sort of shaped like a little bit like the Braven stone. Another one is 130 kilograms. But if you can go and lift a good 150 kilogram Atlas stone, there's no sense you're going to get that stone at 130 because it's off balance. The shape it's a weird shape.
Yeah.
It's smooth. It's quite hard to actually find a good palm position on it. It's a very difficult stone to lift, but it's a fun challenge.
Yeah, sounds
so. There's no two historic stones, natural stones, the same. They've all got their own challenge.
You've got to test yourself at each stone.
It's like this two stones you're going to visit later on today. Yeah. You've got the Newton Moore stone at 101 kilo, and the Dalwhinnie stone at 102 kilo.
They're completely different.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Dalwhinnie stone is a really good stone to lift.
Yeah.
I would recommend that to like a beginner lifter kind of thing. As long as he can lift a good Atlas stone. I would recommend the Dalwhinnie stone as a good beginner lift because the stone is well shaped. It's a good texture to it. It's well balanced. It's a really good stone to lift. The Newton Moore stone being a kilogram lighter is a more difficult lift. The shape is weird. And finding a hand position can be quite awkward as well, because you think you've got a good hand position, but because the weight is
off balance,
it's not spread evenly.
Yes.
You pick it up and it can roll back or forward. Yeah. So then you've got to adjust your hand position. You could have, instead of being in the centre, you could have one hand here, one hand here. Again, it's just where you find that hand position.
Yeah.
But three people could go down and lift that stone. Today, me, you and someone else, we all lift it a different hand position.
Yeah.
But as long as we all stick to the basic lifting technique, but we might all lift it in a different position.
Yeah.
You know?
So now tell me about the Fianna.
Yeah, the Fianna stone is a... It's like
because this is a stone that isn't... is going to be, unfortunately, probably one we're going to miss out, but I'm very worried that once you tell me the story, I'm going to have the gun. So tell me about it.
Well, to start with, that's the Fianna stone is the oldest testing stone in Scotland that we know of.
It's a bad start for me.
It dates back a few thousand years.
Wow.
And it was used by the clan to as a test for young boys to become men and be eligible to be part of the clan's warrior part and fight for the clan.
Mm.
But they have to prove themselves to be a man first, and not just still a boy. So we could, there was like three tests, and lifting the stone onto a plinth was one of them, the Fianna stone. And like I say, it's the oldest one we've got.
Yeah.
And that's actually my logo.
Oh, really? It's the Fianna.
Fianna stone, yeah. This is a picture that was taken during filming Stoneland.
Yeah.
I used that. That's the Fianna stone, yeah, for my
How high is the plinth?
The plinth now is only about maybe 6 inches from the ground. But the ground has been built up.
So how high do you think it would have been?
How high
do I need to lift the Fianna stone to be a man, basically?
Lift up your chest.
Chest, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And
it's 127 kilos?
Yes, 127.
And how does that compare lift difficulty-wise to, say, the Inver stone?
It's just a shape.
Yeah.
Because the Fianna stone, it's quite wide at one end. And it
tapers up.
Like a point here. A lot of people, it's very flat at the bottom at one side, so a lot of people tend to stand upright like that and lift it from the bottom because it's a very flat surface. Mm. But me, I've always liked to go for the wide.
Yeah, before way.
So I tip it over and have the thicker part here and it narrows down to here. So I've always got the thicker, where the most weight is against my stronger arm, which is my right arm. Mm. So I like to lift it that way.
Yeah.
Just the same as you would lift the Inver stone, that kind of position and technique. But it's a big difference because the way it is and all the weight.
Is it much harder?
On the side. It can be.
Okay.
Can be. Okay. I found it all right, but
of course you did. You put the Inver stone on your shoulder first time, so we don't count what you feel. So the three tests to become a warrior in the Fianna was to lift the...
Yeah, you had to lift the stone. I think you had to jump the length of a kilt that was spread on the floor. And I think you had to run as far as you could and duck under a sword. Somebody was holding a sword at arm's length.
Yeah.
And you had to go as far as you could and be able to duck under it without getting hit.
Okay.
That way you could do that in battle.
Yeah.
Someone was fighting, you could duck and whoosh.
Yeah.
You know. So as I know, that was the main three.
Okay, so that's what I've got to try and do. Find someone.
But
with
if you can lift the stone, that's good.
It's
enough.
Good enough.
Good enough for today.
I reckon maybe lift the stone, maybe I can jump over the kilt. We'll give it a go.
tell me
the history of the stone though.
Well, back then the plinth would have been maybe 3 feet or something.
Yeah.
It was just over waist height sort of thing. But it's just with all the ground being built up over the years for the farmland, it's down to about this height, about 6 inches. So when you lift it, I usually just roll it away from the plinth and lift up, find a nice flat area, and lift it up from there, and then put it back onto the plinth. Because you still want to put it onto the plinth because that's
where it goes. Yeah, that's where it sits.
Yeah. The Fianna, the Fianna themselves have got a big history.
Mm.
The only real history I know about the stone itself with the clan is the fact that it was used as a test of strength, so to make a boy into a man and be eligible to fight as a warrior within the clan. But then the clan itself has got an amazing history. Mm. One story goes, I've not told a story for a while, so I'm trying to remember it. There was a guy who was, there was two clans, had a big battle, and the chieftain of the Fianas got killed by the clan member. But he had a son. His wife just gave birth, and then the other chieftain from the other clan went to kill his son, the baby, because so he couldn't come back and get revenge.
Sure,
that was the way it was. But
yeah,
then,
sure, yeah.
Which I suppose it still is now. Can you do? You know. But then his mother gave like a servant the baby, and she hid him away somewhere. But the Fianna are known to be good warriors and really strong and big built and stuff. And he grew up to be quite a monster. He was the strongest person in the village where he grew up. Mm. And he was like the greatest warrior. He was good with a sword. But then his mum and dad at the time heard that the clan was still looking for him because they knew that he'd disappeared. And this was like maybe 18, 20 years later. And they found out where he was living, so he had to move. So they said, "Go move on somewhere else." So he went moving about the country, and he came upon this a river, a creek, and there was a little cabin. And there was this guy in the cabin. He said, "Well, I'm looking for somewhere to stay for a couple of days. Can I stay here?" And the guy said, "Right, okay, you can stay. You can stay with me. But every morning, I go fishing for it was like a magic salmon." And seemingly, if you get this salmon, said a specific name for the salmon, but if you get it, it had magical powers, and if you eat it, you can know everything. You just get so smart.
Yeah.
He said, "Right, I'll labour for you." So he said, but and then one day, like a month later or so, the guy actually caught a salmon. He'd been fishing for a salmon for like 5-6 years. Trying to get it. And one day he got it, and he said to the Fianna guy, "Right, go and prepare his fish for me." So he started preparing the fish, and he cut himself with a knife, and the blood of the salmon went into his cut, and straight away he became smart.
Yeah.
And then I'm not sure what happened after that, because he got the intelligence off the salmon, if it still went to the guy, I know, I'm not sure. But the Fianna warrior guy went and moved on, and because he was quite smart now, he started writing poetry and stuff like that, and then he knew how to start his own clan, and he went and ended up having a great big castle and his own clan, own warriors, and became like a big name. Everyone was feared their name, especially him. And then one day he was in the woods with his dogs hunting, and he came across this the dogs came across this deer, a stag in the woods, but usually they always kill the stag and so he can take it home and eat it. And one day they wouldn't do that, they were just kind of sniffing around it and stuff. So he knew something was wrong with the deer. It was something different. So he took the deer home, and as soon as he walked from the forest into his land, the deer turned into a woman. And then she became a deer because she was supposed to marry somebody, like a warlock of her village, but she didn't like him, so he turned into a deer. And then because for some reason, as soon as she went to his land, she turned back into a woman. So then he married her, and they had a kid, and then he went off to war one day for a few weeks or a month, whatever it was. And then she went out with her son. She was pregnant. It was, sorry. Hadn't given birth yet. She went off into the wood to get some fruit or veg, whatever. And then she came across the wizard who was looking for her. She went and turned into a deer again.
Mm.
And then he went looking for her, but he couldn't find her for like 6, 10, 12 years. He was looking. And he gave up hope. And then one day he came across a boy who was been looked after by this deer. So obviously when she got turned into a deer, she gave birth, but the boy came out like.
Mm.
So he knew that, I can't mind exactly how the story goes.
No, go for it.
So then the boy, he let boy to speak, and he told them that there was a man that kept coming, a wizard guy, and kept coming to see his mom, who was a deer. But then eventually he killed her, and then he managed to escape. And then the little son ended up growing up to being a great warrior as well. And his story is another story. He ended up becoming a great poet as well. His dogs, he had his father's intelligence, so he became a great poet. And then his poetry was known all over the land. And then one day, this woman came from a mystic world, and heard him singing and he's doing his poetry, and asked him to go back with her through this portal. So he ended up, he went back with her, and made it like 500 years later, because he don't grow old. He came back here. He said, I want to go back to my own world and see what's happened. So she says to him, right, well, go on this horse, but don't let your feet touch the ground, because you'll just age straight away and grow old. So he said, right, he did that. So he was on a horse, he went through the portal, he was back like 500 years later, whatever it was, and he seen like a horse and cart or something trying to get up his road, but it was a great big stone blocking it. So he says, right, I'll help you. He went down to move the stone. As he did that, the saddle came loose and he fell down on the floor. And he just suddenly went an old man with grey hair and everything. And I think his name was called Ossian. So then his legend was known, how he went away for into this mystical world and stuff, and who he was. And his father was a great warrior, and he was a great warrior. So then end up, they found him and buried him, because he managed to crawl into some cavern, and then the guy knew who he was from his story and stuff. So he died like that night. And then when they buried him, they erected a great big stone, which is sits next to the Stirling Mare stone. It's only a 5-minute drive down the road. It's called the
Stirling Mare is 5 minutes from the
Ossian stone, yes.
From the Fiona or?
No, you've got the Stirling Mare stone, but then you've got this stone, who the guy who's the legend, Ossian, he was buried, but then they put this great big massive rock on top of him. And it was used as people would travel past, they pay respects, they would get a stone and throw it on top. Last year I went down and did the same thing.
I knew
of it before, but I hadn't visited it.
Wow.
And because I was going to visit the Stirling Mare stone, I stopped off there and got a stone and threw it on top.
Okay, I might do that.
It's only a 5-minute drive from there.
Okay.
Along the same road. Yeah. You actually can't miss it. I've got a video, so I'll show you the video and the location on the phone.
Okay.
But basically that's a story that I can remember. I should have wrote it down and thought about
it. No, it's cool. It's cool.
It's there. It's the Fiona. It's the history. It goes with the Fiona. Yeah. There's a lot more stories out there. There's the whole fact that he's called Ossian, and the Ossian stone sits next to the Stirling Mare stone.
So, what's the history of the Stirling Mare?
The Stirling Mare stone. It was used as a test of strength.
It's another just a test. Yeah.
There used to be three stones, I believe, and then there was only one.
Yeah.
But for a few hundred years as well. Guys used to, when guys are walking the fields and stuff, and walking from one market to the next to sell fruit and veg or buy cattle or whatever, they would stop off, or woodcutters as well, stop off and test their strength, lifting the stone, the Fiona, the Stirling on the Mare. But it's also called the Giant's Grave as well, because it's a great big mound of earth.
Yeah.
It's called the Giant's Grave. And the legend is that a giant fell from the sky and landed there, and then the earth just grew over him.
Wow.
So it's a giant's grave.
And then, I love those stories, the mythology behind it, you know, that there are some stones that have pure historical, it was lifted by this guy hundreds of years ago, you know,
it gives them the significance that they need.
But then, the mythology and the mysticism through some of the stones, it may not be true, but there's this incredible story behind it.
It's magical.
Yeah. So another big place, the two main places where the stones are still where there's the two most significant places with stones is Scotland and Iceland.
Yeah, there's a lot of stones in Iceland. The most famous Icelandic stone is the Husvell stone.
Which is my long-term goal, but it is a very long-term goal because it's unbelievably big.
Yes, it's 186 kilos.
Yeah,
yeah. I recently just had a steel Husvell stone made up for me about 3 or 4 weeks ago. So, but
have you done the Husvell?
No, I got the steel stone made up so I could train for it. So I've left the top of the stone. It's shaped kind of like the same sort of way. And left the top open.
You can load it.
Load it up to what I need. It's suppose it would be the most famous and significant, well-known Icelandic stone.
Yeah,
the Husvell. I mean, it used to be you used to cart it around the goat pen, because the stone itself used to be the gate. There were the door to the gate that used to keep the goats in the pen.
Wasn't it said that the farmer's
daughter
went and picked up this 186 kilo stone? And
that's the legend, that his daughter picked it up and moved it from A to B one day. Whether she walked round the pen or moved it from one location to the next, I'm not sure. But there would have been a reason why she picked it up, because it was the door to the gate pen.
Yeah.
So maybe they moved, the one that moved, so she was seemingly picked up and moved it for him, moved it for her dad.
And then, it seems that the Icelandic stones have a lot more myth and legend around
them. Yes, well, you've got the four Dripfix stones.
Uh-huh.
Also called the Fisherman Stones.
Yes.
They were used a lot of hundreds of years ago as a test of strength. You've got it goes from 23 kilos up to 154, I think. Mm. And then they're really all quite smooth stones.
Yeah. Except by the ocean.
Yes. Yeah. And they were used for if someone wanted a job on a boat at a time, they would lift the stone. The four stones, and whatever stone they could lift, that would be give them like their job.
Yeah.
Say if you couldn't lift, you could lift maybe the first two. You might be a cook or maybe just mopping the
deckhand.
There's nothing wrong with being a cook at all.
Yeah.
But it's just because there's no strength involved there.
Sure. Yeah.
But if you could lift other stones, especially the big one, you'd be rowing down under the. Under there rowing the boat.
That sounds like a much harder job.
Yeah.
I think I'll pretend, I can't lift the stone, leave me in the kitchen.
The strongest people would be set in the middle of the boat, because it's harder to row in the middle, because there's more force there as it goes out. And of course, when a ship would land somewhere in Pluta Village, should I say, there would the guys who are the stronger, or the crew, would get first picks, the women, the treasures, and whatever.
When they were looting and whether when they were fighting.
And then the guys who are the weaker guys who lift the smaller stones would have to wait till the end and get the drugs at the end. So it's quite a good story.
There's another one of the farmer who made a devil made a deal with the devil, right?
Yep, by the Legistine stone. The stone weighs about 220 kilos.
220?
Yes.
Jeez.
It's about 3 feet in length.
Yeah.
You've got to stand up, squat down, bear hug it, pick it up, and just walk around a big rock with it.
Yeah.
But the story here is, one day a farmer, hundreds of years ago again, a farmer was, his crops just wouldn't grow, and he just shouted up at the sky, sell my soul for a good crop. Something along that lines. And next it was the devil appeared. Says, I make a deal with you. If you can lift that stone up and just take a few steps with it, I'll give you the best crop you've ever seen for the rest of your life. And he says, all right, a deal. But he says, if you fail, then I'll get your soul down to hell right now. He says, right, deal. But so he went to pick it up. He stood up, go to pick it up. But the devil had a couple of his minions grab a stone from the bottom, so he couldn't move it because they were pulling it down and he was trying to pick it up. So he failed, and then the devil says, right, down you come with me. So he took his soul down to hell. And then seemingly the priest at the time, he'd heard about this story getting passed on. He went to where it happened, and he called on the devil, and the devil appeared, and the priest says, like, this is out of order. You know, this is just not happening. He says, put your soul up to heaven, or there's going to be trouble. And the devil says, I'll make a deal with you. If you can get people to walk this stone round that rock 100 times, I'll release his soul to heaven as soon as the 100th one's finished.
Yeah.
It can be done by the same person. It can be done by
many people.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be 100 people. It just has to go round 100 times. I think they're on 15 now.
15?
So
this poor guy. One day I want to go to Iceland to do the Húsafell and to do some of these other legendary stones. That they seem so much heavier than any of the stones in other countries. So this is many years ahead. People see me lift the Invistan, they go, oh, Húsafell next. They go, you have no idea. You have no idea how heavy that Húsafell is, and it's smooth and it's slick and it's awkward. Yeah,
it's not just picking up, it's walking.
And walking with it as well.
Walking like 50 feet.
Yeah.
And you're walking around in a circle.
Yeah.
It's not even you're going straight. You've got to go around.
You've got to navigate where you're going and you can't see
it. The ground is uneven.
Yeah.
As well. So it's a tricky one.
Yeah. And then, so I always thought I'd like to go and to carry this stone around and try and give my help to free his soul. But that's before I found out it was 220 kilos.
Yeah, 220. Yeah. I mean, you just have to come off the ground enough so you can walk around.
Take a few steps,
You've got to do a full revolution.
Yeah.
To count as one.
Yeah. Can you put it down in between?
I think you've got to go all the way around.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, one go.
Okay.
It's like the Húsafell there. Well, Húsafell, if you put it down, that's it done.
Yeah.
You've got to pick it up and go all the way around in one go.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go halfway around with Húsafell.
Adjust the grip.
Adjust your grip. Lap it, adjust your grip. If it touches the ground, that's it done.
Yeah.
You have to start again.
Yeah.
Same with this. If you pick it up and put it down, you start again.
Yeah.
It's a full revolution you've got to do.
Wow.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, if we and you go over a couple of years, we can finish the 100 off for them. And we'll see our layer light going up to the sky.
Wow, but that's so crazy. They've only done 15 revolutions.
It's about there, yeah. So amazing. Yeah, we're trapped there for a while yet, getting tortured.
It will be a long time.
There's a good story about the devil. He's a terrible.
He's a crafty one, isn't he?
He's a bugger. He's the first time I met Bill Crawford, I was telling you about the stone. It's called, actually called the Crawford Putting Stone. It's the heaviest stone I've tried yet. It's well over 200 kilos.
Oh, wow.
It's very, very big. It's girthy, so you can't get your arms under it.
Yeah.
You'd have to be quite tall, 6.5 feet maybe, get your hands underneath properly, get a proper grip. Smooth, just like this again.
Wow.
Very smooth. A good story. One guy hundreds of years ago.
Is this Iceland again? Or?
No, this is it's in New Deer, Scotland.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Scottish stone. It was a guy who was a laird of a big house, and he had slaves and everything. And he was seemingly he was quite nasty to everyone. Nobody liked him. He treated his slaves really bad. Well, if you've got slaves anyway, you're near a nice person.
It's a bad start, isn't it?
It's a bad start having slaves in the first place. He was even meaner than usual, you know. And he had this stone, the Crawford Putting Stone, what's also called a devil stone as well.
Okay.
He had it on his land, and for years, he was trying to lift this stone off the ground, and never once could he manage. He couldn't even break it off the ground an inch. And of course, this made him even more frustrated and more of a twat. And then, one day, he was looking out his window, right, and looking directly at the stone, and he seen this guy, this big guy, about 7 foot, come up on the horseback. He got to the stone, he jumped off the horse, bent down, picked the stone up onto his lap, and picked up his chest, put it down, and did it for a second time.
Yeah.
And then he just went on the horse and rode off again. Didn't even stop to look around, just on the horse and away. And then the guy seeing this became really frustrated seeing someone lift it, especially that easy and that tight. He was so determined to get it. He went down for hours. He was sitting there trying to pick his stone up. And then eventually, after a few hours, he managed to get it off the ground a few inches. So that was him. The rage was up. He took a couple of steps back. He came back and bent down, grabbed the stone, hoist up, got it up to about knee height. Yeah. And with all the pressure, his eyes popped. That was him blind, I remember. And seemingly, the story goes that the guy on horseback was a devil.
Yeah.
And he was trying to teach the guy a lesson. Probably, if someone's going to mean, it's going to mean you. but you can actually see kind of claw prints in it where the devil maybe really? Grabbed it and
wow.
Because of fiery hands, whatever, he yeah. grabbed it and picked it up, you know, got a grip because it was smooth.
Yeah.
You can actually see the little...
The marks on it.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So that's, yeah.
So I could sit and talk to you about every single, the history of every single stone, but I don't want to keep you for too long. There's a few more things sort of on the topic, but not the, specifically the myth of the individual stones. First one is, because I found out very recently, actually, when I was planning this trip, I was talking to a friend of mine who's into stone lifting and showed him what my plans were. And I found out that the Wallace Putin stone has been broken.
Yes.
And... Obviously, that's a huge shame. I know there was a lot of history involved in that stone.
Yeah, well, that was actually goes back to William Wallace.
Yeah.
And seemingly they picked the stone up and threw it at the English during battle.
It's a very heavy stone as well.
So. Yeah, it's 125 kilo. It was a very good stone to lift. It was very awkward and misshapen. It was a good one, a very good challenge. But yeah, one day someone...
There was already a crack in it.
Yeah, I can't actually say I've seen the crack in it, but other folk were saying there was something there. But then, someone just came along, picked up and dropped it, like we were saying before.
Yeah.
Again, I hate seeing people just dropping a stone, but that's what you did. And then,
but didn't even tell anyone about it?
No, just left it. And then it was someone from America got in touch with me saying they were over here, I'm going to visit that stone, so I gave them the directions for it, and then they gave sent my photograph through my phone saying, is this it, because it's broken.
Wow.
And then I got a friend of mine, James Graham, he lives quite close by, so he drove up to see it that night, and he verified it was broken.
And it's been taken in?
Yeah, James took it away, took it home that night.
Is it going to be attempted to be fixed?
Well, we were thinking, because when I was working as a builder, we I'd fixed stones before. We just kind of, we drill into the stone and you put a metal spike in it, and then you're a lot of resin, and you can hold it together. But I think we might actually, he's done a lot of inquiring and building sites and stuff to see who can do it and if it can be done.
Do you think it'll be restored?
One thing I thought of we could do is maybe fix it with resin and a spike, which would keep it together.
Yeah.
But not to lift it. And put a plaque on it, saying what it was, and get an ash stone to match it.
Nice.
To be the exact same weight and as close to the shape as we can.
Yeah.
But the same weight. Then they can lift that one instead.
Yeah. But I think that's a good idea, because if it's broken once, there's a good chance it'll break again. But it starts to raise the question of stone lifting seems to be getting more popular.
Yes.
Through doing stuff like the little film that we're making at the moment and doing podcasts like this, I'm trying to do my best to kind of spread the knowledge and the understanding of this as a sport or a hobby. But are there some downsides to maybe the more people who are involved or the more people who know about lifting these stones, there are less people they might not respect that or understand the culture so much, and you have people doing stuff like dropping stones and breaking them and not even telling anyone?
Well, it's like everything. There's that in everything. People take part in powerlifting competitions or strongman, but there's a lot of guys out there that do it for the right reason. They do it because they want... It is who they are.
Yeah.
They've found a sport and it is who they are, and they want to be as good as they can be.
Mm.
But they respect the sport at the same time. There's other people compete just to say, I did that, I'm the best, I'm working. And... You get that in everything, but you get that. I've seen it a few times with the historic stones as well. People just going down just to say, I can do that, I'm better than you, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But I've got no respect for anyone who does it just for the pure reason of trying to...
The ego.
Yeah, the ego reason. Yeah. And saying, oh, I'm better than you, blah, blah. I mean, I've lifted a lot of, I've lifted all the stones, I've ended on quite well, but if I'm with someone, showing them the location of lifting a stone with them, I'll never say that I can do this, I can do that, I did this, or whatever, because it's always about the individual. It's about you versus the stone.
Mm.
It could be 50 people there, but it's still about, you're not doing it for them, you're doing it for you.
Yeah.
It's about you making contact with the stone and you versus the stone, you know?
Yeah.
As well, it's kind of overcoming that stone and what you can do with it. It's all about your own personal challenge. It doesn't matter. If you've got an ego, just leave it at the door or just don't go.
Yeah.
And do it for the right reason.
And what advice would you give people, apart obviously from watching Stoneland and getting this book, Stone Lifting, An Ancient Test of Strength Revived, that was written by you and with Bill Crawford. Apart from watching the film and getting the book, what else can people do to if they listen to this or they see this and they're starting to learn about the historic lifting stones all around the world and they want to get into stone lifting, be it stone lifting, natural stones, just in the wild, or finding historic stones?
Well, there's a number of reasons you can get involved in this. It's just to visit the locations themselves. You've seen the locations are beautiful,
yeah, they are.
Very picturesque. I mean, you could go to any of these sites and you could even drive them from one site to the next. You could stop off, take a picture, and you could easily go home and hang a picture on your wall,
yeah,
and you could be happy it's there.
Yeah.
But then if you want to get involved in stone lifting itself and lift the stones, I got a lot of that questions, the same question, what should I be lifting in the gym, what should I be deadlifting, what should my routine be in the gym, should I be doing heavy bicep curls or whatever?
Yeah. Should you?
No.
No. I've been doing it all wrong all this time.
No. I train my biceps more like longevity. Sure. And I only do hammer curls. I do hammer curls, but to the inside.
Yeah.
It's like grabbing the stone.
Yeah.
At the same time, if you just concentrate on doing really big curls with the dumbbells or the bar, you're building your muscle up a little bit different. And when it's easy to tear that muscle.
Really?
It's easier to tear that muscle when you're lifting a stone.
Yeah.
If you're doing for like strongman and other stuff,
yeah,
then maybe. But for physically forced lifting stones, you want to train different. Like, you don't want to just specifically do like a bodybuilding routine on your muscle and really build it bulky.
Because you get in the way.
Yeah, but it's more that
you'll get injured.
It can get injured because it's not used to being in that motion. Can go through motion in that position.
Sure.
Whereas like a hammer curl puts it in more in that position.
Yeah.
And it helps strengthen it, but it helps the hammer curl helps. Length of the muscle as well, not just build it big and bulky like a concentration curl does. So no, don't do that. But yeah, a lot of people ask me that question a lot about what you should do in the gym, especially deadlifts and squats. But if you want to lift stones, it's like anything.
You have to lift stones.
If you want a deadlift, go and pick up a bar, then do it, and just learn a technique. If you are like into stone lifting, the only way to do it. Lift a natural stone. So get a natural stone and feel what it's like and lift it and let your body feel it, because your body's working, your muscles are working in a different way because the weight is so close to your body. It's not over there. Your arms aren't straight down. You've got to have your arms in a position, and your one hand could be up here grabbing a stone and one hand could be at the side, because it's the only position you can grab a stone maybe. But the only thing you can do to get good at stone lifting is to go and lift a stone. But don't just stick with Atlas stones, because Atlas stone and an Archer stone are two different things.
Yeah, very.
Because let's say with an Atlas stone, you have to put your hand underneath. And then apart from the weight of the Atlas stone, the biggest obstacle is the girth. And the shorter person, it'll be harder for them because they can't get their hands under. Atlas stone is more... for a taller person, because they can put your arms
giant
under.
Strong men are 6'10", 7 foot tall,
because that girth pushes your arms at
you.
But with an arch or a stone. I prefer to lift them long ways, but I can get grip that way. Mm. As long as I get a grip, then it's going up.
Yeah.
You know? So,
yeah.
I mean, I find it easier to lift like a 170 kilogram natural stone than it is to lift 150 atlas stone or 140 atlas stone. Yeah, I find it easier to lift a heavier natural stone because I can get my grip.
Yeah.
But then with the girth of an atlas stone that weight, it's really, I find it difficult to kind of grip it like.
Mm. And finally, we've spoken a lot about the past of strength lifting and how you got into it. What do you want to see in an ideal world for the future of stone lifting?
I think more it's just to also kind of take in more what it is and leave, stop doing it just to boast about it in an ego way. I like to see people respecting the stones, respecting everything it is, and everyone just kind of helping each other out.
Mm.
You know, if someone asks for help, give them help.
Mm.
Then I like to say, well, I managed to do this, but they want you to do the same thing. I would like it to get more popular, of course, and for more people to kind of go around and do it.
Yeah.
But also,
they must show it, the respect. Yeah.
Be respectful and take in the scenery.
Mm.
You know, go, you know, travel around Scotland. Just stop off and take in everything.
Yeah.
Do
I can't explain how beautiful it's been to travel around.
Make the whole, can embrace the whole culture of the thing.
Yeah.
Take in the scenery. Respect the stone. Pick it up and put it down properly. Don't just pick it up and let it go. If someone needs help, help them. Just be respectful. Mm. But yeah, it's always good to see people coming in and lifting.
Yeah.
Especially when I do get a lot of people getting in touch saying they've enjoyed Stone Land and they've taken up Stone Lifting and enjoyed the book. They're really pleased to be a part of such a good culture.
Yeah.
Which is always really nice to hear. So I'd like to hear more of that.
Awesome.
So.
Awesome.
But I'm hoping I can kind of also want to start the strength coaching online. Yeah. I can kind of
help people in a more direct way. Yeah,
because there's a lot of people, say, especially it's pretty big in America. A lot of guys want to come over and do the stones here, or someone just actually want to lift over there. Mm. It's like when I was doing it last year and year before, when I was I was teaching in New Hampshire. Had a couple of guys who were stonemasons come in to take the class, because they lift stones every day at work because they're building walls and stuff. But the technique was really bad, so they were getting sore backs and they couldn't lift like a smaller stone the same as they could lift a bigger stone because
the shape and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. They're different. So I was teaching them. I was quite pleased to teach them how to lift properly and proper technique, and tell them about the differences with the stones and that. And how to work out the best way to lift it. And they all went away quite happy, like. And one of the guys came back the following year, which was the last year from the previous year, and said he's been applying that technique at work and it's been helping him a lot, like.
Awesome.
So I would like.
So he was just learning. He was just learning stone lifting for his job.
Yeah.
Wow.
So okay. I would like to do that. I would like to do more stuff like that. Yeah. You know, teach people who really want to do it.
Yeah.
And who are going to embrace it, sort of thing. But yeah. He was quite happy, and he said he's been getting a lot better at work.
Awesome.
Through that, like.
Yeah.
Well,
I want to say thank you on behalf of everyone who has read your book and kind of follows all the information and all the research that you've been doing, because the work that you've done and Bill Crawford done and Peter Martin did and his father did allows everyone else to find out things about history and to do things and to be part of that history in a way that we wouldn't be able to do otherwise. So
yeah, I'm just really glad to be, I mean, I'm happy to be a part of it all,
yeah,
and being able to kind of give people advice and put the information out there for the people to use. I get a lot of people quite all the time just getting in touch asking advice and what you should do, how you should get started, how you should lift, is my lifting technique good here, I've got a sticking point here, what can I do to get over it. Just about coming to Scotland, where to stay, how to set up a plan, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I've even last week I had three different people get in touch with me, So I've had hundreds of people since 2016
awesome.
Get in touch. So that's why I wrote the book in the first place, to put the information out there, because I kept getting the same question over and over and over. So I think a lot of people, the book's been out, I've had quite a lot of people getting in touch as well, saying that it's helped them as well. Now they're getting really serious about it and more involved and wanting to do more and come over here, go to Iceland. And people have even started doing their own research and finding out stuff as well, which is good. But we still live, and it's all about technique. You'll find after repetition, after repetition, after repetition, like everything, you'll find your own method. It's like doing a deadlift. Someone will teach you in a gym how to deadlift. But you'll find your own proper technique for you, which works for you after repetition, after repetition. You won't deadlift like them. You'll apply the basics that they taught you, but you'll find your own method. Whether you squat down more, stand up more, lean over more, whatever it is, you can straighten your back,
your own style,
what you do, your own style. It's the same with the stones. As long as you stick to the basics, I'll teach everyone the basics and how I do it. But then after repetition, they'll find what works, kind of their own style of lifting. But as long as you stick to the basics, and that'll minimise the effect of injury occurring, and it's also going to lead the pathway to them getting better in the first
stronger.
Place. So always stick to the basics. And because always find your feet position. Make sure you never lift with bent arms. As soon as you lift with bent arms, you can hurt a bicep or a weight can go to your back. And the one thing to always remember when lifting a stone, if your hands slip, let it go. Don't try and catch it.
Yeah, you said to me when we were lifting earlier.
As soon as you, the natural reaction is to catch something if you drop it. But because all that weight is so condensed and it's against your centre of gravity and your muscles are working in a different way, as soon as you go to grab that stone, because if you drop it and catch it, straight away that weight transfers to your lower back. And that's you out of the game. And that could beat you out of the game for maybe just the rest of that day, a couple of days, a week, a month. So if the stone drops, let go, just concentrate and just get your feet out of the way. Just move your feet out of the way and let it fall to the floor. But never try and catch it, because that will cause a back injury. So if it drops, let it drop.
Yeah, that's awesome. I literally could sit and talk to you about stones for hours, but I've got to go. I feel pumped up to go and lift some more stones today. I just wanted to say thank you for sitting down with me, for taking me and seeing the stones that we lifted earlier, which was awesome. And hopefully I look forward to lifting stones with you in the future.
Yeah, looking there. Next time you come back, we'll set something up.
100%.
Just before we go,
yeah,
I'll say about the basic 10 that I wrote about in the book.
Yep.
Two sets of five. Think about this basic 10 every time you lift. The first five is the characteristics that make up each and every stone, because they're all different. Again, your size, what we spoke about before, your size, the shape, the texture, the weight and the balance of a stone. And then your second five is your five lifts you can do. Getting the wind beneath the stone, lifting a few inches off the ground. Just 2 to 3 inches off the ground, so you can see air. You can actually see something underneath it.
Yep.
You can see right through it. Then you've got to the lap, over and knees on the lap in a squatting position. Number three is from the squatting position up to the starting position at chest height. Number four to the shoulder, and number five overhead. So I gave the first five, so you know what to look out for in every stone. So you can read what we call reading the stone. Use the first five to read the stone and put it in a position that you think you can lift it. You can get a hand placement. So you've got to read the stone and put it in the right position for yourself to lift it. And the second five will just give you something to, if you can only get the, say, number one or number two, it lets you train to get number three. It gives you a goal in mind.
Sure.
You know, so it just gives you something to work up to as well. So,
awesome. So. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
It's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed it. It's been good.
I'm glad. Me too. Awesome. Cheers. That is it, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode and maybe learned a few things, maybe somewhat understand why I'm so fascinated and obsessed with going around and lifting old stones. And if you are interested and you want to find out more about Martin or about stone lifting in general, then you can follow him. His Instagram is @thestoneman265.
TheStoneMan265. Also, definitely check out his book, which is Stone Lifting, An Ancient Test of Strength Revived. It's a really, really cool book, and it's got loads of information in there, both on the history of some of the Scottish and Icelandic stones, and also some information about how to lift and how to train for stone lifting. As always, if you want to get in contact with me or the podcast, then you can email me at podcast@raspberryape.com. You can check me out on Instagram or Twitter at @raspberry_ape. You can also, and please do, go and follow my the podcast, specifically podcast Instagram page, which is at the Raspberry Ape Podcast, or at Raspberry Ape Podcast. I should really know that. But go find it anyway and go follow that if you're not doing it already. And of course, if you're not following this podcast, if you're not subscribed on any of the platforms, be it YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, any of these, then that would be awesome. That's about it. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I will catch you next time. Take it easy.